don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I wanted to read a quick one today that I think is really important, just because there's always a lot of people claiming that nodes are not important, and I vehemently beg to differ. This is a quick one by Jamison Lopp that I read quite some time ago. It was released on October 22nd, 2017. So he discusses a couple of forks that are either supposed to be coming up soon and or have since been canceled and or already occurred. But it is, again, by Jamison Lopp, and it is titled Securing Your Financial Sovereignty. 2017 is turning out to be the year of the airdropped Bitcoin fork. First Bitcoin Cash, then Bitcoin Gold, then SegWit2x. Now the ecosystem is primed to become even more confusing, as multiple forks vie for the title of, quote, the real Bitcoin. What is the real Bitcoin? I'm not sure it's possible to objectively define it based upon metrics collected at a given snapshot in time. Rather, the only thing that you can be assured of is what the real Bitcoin is from your own perspective, the rules to which you agree and which you enforce. Note that this article applies to every single Bitcoin fork, past, present, and future. Full nodes for freedom. How do you enforce the rules to which you agree? You have to run a fully validating Bitcoin node and actually use it to verify payments you receive. Nodes act as your personal sentinel, protecting you against fraudulent activity. They reject actions undertaken by rule breakers, even while you're busy or asleep. While some claim that running a node today is purely altruistic, there are indirect incentives for doing so. Full nodes offer the best privacy model. If you're using a centralized wallet, you have no privacy. The wallet provider knows all of your transactions and addresses. If you're using an SPV wallet, your privacy is not obviously as terrible, but is nonetheless fundamentally broken. With a full node, you download all of the blockchain data and only query for addresses or transactions locally. Network observers can't see what you're interested in. Full nodes offer the strongest security model. When you have a copy of the ledger that you have validated yourself, you no longer have to trust a third party to be honest about the state of that ledger. If you're using a centralized wallet, you are completely trusting that they are running nodes that enforce the rules of the network. If you're using an SPV wallet, you're trusting that the majority of hash power is validating the rules of the network to which you agree. If you configure your node to accept incoming connections, it helps the network by sending blocks and transactions to other full nodes to help them sync, and it services data requests from lightweight clients. From this standpoint, full nodes altruistically support the health of the network. Some users may wish to do this in order to protect their investment in Bitcoin. From a macro perspective, full nodes keep the network honest. The more entities who are actively running nodes to audit their economic interactions, the more robust the network is against attacks. If you're thinking from a nation-state attack scenario, more nodes equals more, quote, doors that have to be kicked down in order to coerce the node owner into making changes against their will. How to run a full node. If you have an always-on computer, you can follow these instructions to install a fully validating node. If you're overwhelmed by the 150-plus configuration options, you can check out my user-friendly config generator. If you don't have an always-on server or desktop available, but would like a low-cost node, You could follow these instructions to build a node with a Raspberry Pi, or you can buy a pre-configured node from Bitseed. How to use your full node. The obvious way to make use of a full node is to just use the wallet functionality on the node. But this probably isn't very convenient if you don't carry your full node machine around with you. So what is one to do? Answer: use lightweight wallets that allow you to configure connecting to your own full node. At time of writing, the SPV wallets I'm aware of that support connecting to a specific full node are as follows: Bitcoin Wallet, Bread Wallet, Greenbits, MSigna, Samurai Wallet, Simple Bitcoin Wallet. If you set up an Electrum server alongside your full node, you can configure the following wallets to connect to it: Airbits and Electrum. If you set up a BitCore wallet service, you can configure the following wallets to connect to it: BitPay and CoPay. Note that when setting up other wallets to connect directly to your full node, you'll need to ensure that incoming connections are correctly routed to it. Check out this network configuration guide for details. And it's also worth noting that given the open source nature of the system, many other possible configurations could be developed. For example, several years ago, BitGo realized that a lot of enterprises had written their wallets to directly use Bitcoin Core's JSON RPC API, and thus it was a pain for them to switch to use BitGo's API. We found a nice compromise and created BitGo-D, which enables a drop-in replacement that's compatible with Bitcoin Core. The added bonus is that it also enables users to continue running their full node and use it to validate that the transactions BitGo sends and receives on behalf of the user. It would be great if other web wallets offered similar software so that users could have the best of both worlds: flexibility in using lightweight wallets without compromising trustlessness. Exercise your rights or they will atrophy. What are you willing to pay to secure your financial sovereignty? Is a few hours of your time or a couple hundred dollars too high to bear? Don't fall victim to apathy. Deferring such decisions to others is a conscious act of ceding your sovereignty. Quote, "The fight for the future of Bitcoin isn't small blockers versus big blockers. It's a struggle against apathy sliding us into authoritarianism." End quote. With regard to the great Bitcoin scaling debate, Andreas Antonopoulos laid out the reasoning behind keeping the block size small and thus keeping the cost of running a fully validating node low. Suffice to say, blocks can never be large enough to meet global demand. The scaling debate has revealed a fundamental economic conflict between users who want fast, cheap transactions and users who want fast, cheap cost of full ledger validation. As Andreas notes in his talk, this isn't an issue of scale. It's an issue of maintaining the more important principles underpinning the system: autonomy, privacy, security, and liberty. Quote, "Everyone wants to scale Bitcoin, but not all scaling methods have the same consequences. Always ask the question, up or out?" End quote. Keep this in mind when you hear of plans to scale up Bitcoin so that only the wealthiest individuals and institutions can afford to run fully validating nodes. Keep this in mind when some people try to convince you that Bitcoin is ruled by Nakamoto consensus and that the only nodes that matter are those owned by miners. Do you disagree with such a vision for the future of Bitcoin? Empower yourself by running a full node. No one can take this power away from you. Quote, "It takes 40,000 kilowatt hours, roughly, to mint a block. Yet this power can't overcome a few lines of code being run on a 4-watt Raspberry Pi." End quote. And that was it. I definitely encourage you to go check out that Medium post, because obviously every time I said check out this guide or you can use these instructions, to set up. Like, he's got a lot of links about setting up your full node, and I definitely encourage you to do so. I do, in fact, run my own full node, and have, I did very early on when I first got into Bitcoin, but then it was kind of intensive on my computer. Like, it always used a lot of resources, and it was really sluggish to boot up and sync and all that good stuff. And for many years, I just deferred that responsibility to other nodes on the network, and I just used Lite clients. But because of that, I didn't realize at the time how much I was opening myself up to a loss of privacy and other limitations. And it wasn't until all the hard fork stuff started that I was like, okay, I really need to run a full node again. And one thing that, like, when people say that full nodes don't matter, they're missing, first, I think they're completely missing the history of Bitcoin, because full nodes rejected the SegWit 2x. It was like some 90% of full nodes were running what would be incompatible with SegWit 2x code. And despite like 85%, I believe it was at one point, of hash power signaling for SegWit 2x, they abandoned it because they were going to lose the entire network if they did so. And what's interesting about that is, because the way I like to think about it is that the current Bitcoin blockchain, the Decided Chain, is essentially a mutual agreement between nodes and miners. The nodes pick for themselves which chain, the full nodes only, pick which chain it is that they're going to follow and which rule set they're going to adhere to. The miners get to extend that chain. And if they extend the chain that most users, most full nodes decide they're going to follow, those full nodes allow them coins, allow them a payment, a salary of coins on that chain. So if the full nodes don't follow them, even if a miner, a single miner, has 90% of the hash rate, they can't just change the rules of the network. Because if they change the rules, they simply fork themselves away from the network. They would still have 90% of the hash power, but they wouldn't be able to spend any of the coins they mined on any of the other nodes on the network. The other nodes have to specifically and deliberately download the software that changed the rules in order to let the miner spend those coins somewhere. And if nobody follows the miners, if none of the economic players, none of the users follow the miners, then all they do is fork themselves off the network and essentially wipe out their salary. They're giving up their pay in order to do that in an attempt to change the rules. And the only way to make sure you're not following them, if you have a light client, you may very well follow 90% of the hash power, because particularly an SPV client, that's what you would do, because they provide the proof, and as long as they validate the proof, you're accepting that, okay, well, 90% of the miners are, in fact, following these new rules, and that's all you're doing. So your SPV client would follow the miners, but if you're running a full node, you would reject their change in consensus, and it would simply look like blocks are coming in slower, but you're still offering up, follow my rules, adhere to the validation and verification that I am doing and that has been part of the entire chain that I have a history of, and you will still get paid a salary, which will either pull that 90% hash power back onto the network, as now they're just sitting on a massive liability that's not paying them anything, or it encourages other miners to come in and fill the gap, thereby taking the salary that would have been taken by the other miners originally. So in the short term, there is a risk to, you know, hash power fluctuation and block times, but in the mid to long term, there's no risk here. There's very little risk, I guess, if you're running a full node and the full nodes adhere to the same rules and do not attempt to break consensus with the longest chain. And I think we really saw this with both the Bitcoin Cash soft hard fork, excuse me, and then also the BIP 148, the SegWit soft fork. I think we kind of saw, we really saw this proven in the real world scenario, what the consequences of not having the nodes follow you is exactly, and more importantly, what happens with a adjustment in profitability and time of the hash rate. That was one of the most incredible things after that fork happened to watch, particularly because of the EDA. It's the emergency difficulty adjustment that originally was on Bitcoin Cash before their next, shortly after that, they had another hard fork. So watching the hash rate fluctuate between those two networks just based on profitability was kind of fascinating, because it proved that the adjustment was like almost immediate. Like, you'd see it within a block that hash rate would move from one chain to the other based on profitability, meaning that it was in fact the nodes, the network, and the market that dictated what was profitable and what wasn't. And the hash rate was a lagging indicator. They're chasing the valid chain that everyone else is agreeing on, rather than deciding which chain is valid. So I think we've basically seen that demonstrated in the real world. And most people who disagree with that are essentially just ignoring the history of Bitcoin and or just trusting somebody else's opinion on it because they weren't there when it happened and watching it very excitedly with many, many boxes of popcorn on hand. it was a really crazy time. If you were not here then in Bitcoin, I ate that stuff up. That was so much fun. And I think I've done a good read on BIP 148, if I'm not mistaken. I'll go back through the episodes just to see, because if not, that might be a really good one to tackle sometime soon. And I'll try to dig into something good. I think there's something on Bitcoin Magazine. But anyway, this article was again by Jameson Lopp, and you can find him on Twitter at Lopp, L-O-P-P. And also check out his website. I know I have talked about this before, but it begs to be reiterated many times, lopp.net, L-O-P-P.net. He has a resources page that I use religiously. Like, I, instead of having an entire page of, or an entire folder of bookmarks, I have a resources bookmarks that is just lopp.net, because there's so many great resources on that website. So if you want to learn about Bitcoin, you want to learn about some of the configurations and the inner workings and scripts and Lightning Network and all kinds of stuff, there's an ocean of stuff up there, and I definitely encourage you to check it out. I will link to all of this and tag him in the post. And of course, as always, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and Medium, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and share it with everybody, because it's so cool to learn about all the crypto stuff. Thanks for joining me, everybody. We will close this here. This has been a Crypto Economy Quick Read. Take it easy.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.